what's on the horizon.
Yes.
Could be one of three people now, though.
Yeah, but really, we've identified the threesome, the U2 threesome.
U2 explosion here.
Mm-hmm.
All right, it is Midweek Wednesday, the 23rd of September, 2009. We have Omar Gutierrez here from the Faith Formation Office, so we'll be visiting with him shortly.
And he is wearing his I Heart is Encyclicals t-shirt.
I come in the name of love.
That's right.
Oh.
Well done.
Yes, he's hip to the room.
Thank you. Fast on his feet.
Mm-hmm.
All right, tomorrow, 4:30 in the afternoon, it begins the Spirit Listener Appreciation Party, and this is a totally free event. Our way of saying thanks to all of you here who have been praying, supporting this ministry that we call Spirit Catholic Radio, KVSS. It'll be at the Frederick Square Shopping Center. That's 84th and Frederick, a couple blocks south of Center on 84th. Few blocks north of I-80 if you take the 84th Street exit. And again, free hot dogs, popcorn, and ice cream treats while supplies last. We've got Spirit 102.7 balloons, our two-pocket homework folders, yard signs, bumper stickers,
inflatables that they won't let me go into, Omar. I don't know why.
Yeah, no,
they said no.
Chris, no bouncy and inflatable.
Yeah, big cross.
No.
No.
Cookies from the cookie company while supplies last as well. I've got some great entertainment for all the young ones, so again, bring that family. The more the merrier. Milk and Cookie Player Clowns will be there, Brother Juniper, the Little Friar and Friends, Face Painting by Our Witness, the Time for Action is Now youth team. Hear their programs Thursday at 7 p.m. here on the radio. They'll be doing face painting. The inflatables Chris mentioned, and a couple of carnival games provided by Brian Hill Entertainment. Metal Arc Model A Ford Club will be there with some great classic cars, Omaha Fire Department. Knights of Columbus from Mary Our Queen will be our grill masters for the event. And for you teetotalers, iced tea provided by the Tea Smith.
And, I total tea.
Yep, you do. Spirit Koozies provided by Cosgrave's Catholic Books and Gifts. So again, it's tomorrow, Spirit Listener Appreciation Party. It begins from 4:30, runs for 2 hours. For all of our closest personal family members and friends. Again,
are you going to come?
Family. It's gonna be
bring your wife and kids.
Well,
good.
We're all going to be there.
Yeah,
good.
Right.
I'll bring a chair for your lovely wife. Oh, I'll bring a couple.
Excellent. And we do want to encourage people to bring those lawn chairs.
Yeah.
You bet. We will have some tables and chairs, but probably not nearly enough. So if you want to have a set while the kids are bouncing around in the inflatables, bring along those lawn chairs, folks, and enjoy the day. It's totally free. Everything has been donated. We'd like to thank, as we did, a lot of the folks that we mentioned along the way. Farmland for the hot dogs, Rotella's, and it'll just be a great time. And the weather is supposed to be beautiful tomorrow. It should be sunny and a high near 73 with calm winds. So.
I'm making all kinds of noises with the microphone stand.
You are.
I'm sorry, everybody.
It's quite all right.
Well, it jumps out at you like that.
All right.
Thank you.
So, Spirit Listener Appreciation Party. Come and let us slap you with a little love.
Yes.
That's all free.
Love
slap.
That's
the acronym, Spirit Listener Appreciation Party.
Nice.
Let us slap you with love.
Back in the day when the Archbishop used to slap you.
Try for confirmation.
That's right.
That's right. Confirmation. I think that wasn't that a gesture, kind of slap the devil out of you or something like that?
You're
a
soldier for Christ.
Soldier for Christ.
Snap out of it. I love it.
Slap you with love.
But
I
we
like
slap
it.
You with love.
That's right. A little love slap.
Bring it on.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Marching saints to heaven. Here we go.
I love it.
8:17. It's Midweek Wednesday, the 23rd of September, 2009. A little patchy fog here before 9, otherwise mostly cloudy today, and a high near 70.
You sound just like Bono when you do that,
Bruce
Omar.
Bruce is my hero.
There we go. Welcome back, everyone, to Spirit Mornings here on Spirit Catholic Radio 102.7 FM KVSS. I'm Bruce McGregor. She is
Chris McGregor.
And joining us in studio, our coordinator of lay leadership and social witness formation in the Catholic Faith Formation Office here in the scenic Archdiocese of Omaha. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the platform this morning, Mr. Omar Gutierrez.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
Good to have you back.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
We are excited about a couple of things. First, the talks that you're doing at St. Vincent de Paul.
Yes, that's right.
Monday, the next two Mondays.
That's
and
right.
It's at 7:15, but you can go to 6:45 Mass. 7:15.
Highly recommended.
Yeah.
Don't you love Mass?
Of
I love the Eucharist.
I could not like Mass. Goodness.
Oh, I love it, especially when it's celebrated by the good folks at St. Vincent de Paul.
Mm.
Then at 7:15, it's a breakfast talk.
That's
and
right.
You'll be doing that this Monday and then the following Monday on the Feast of St. Faustina. Isn't that the 5th? Yes. And that is, again, St. Vincent de Paul is located over at, what is it?
144th and Maple.
Well, yeah, located between Blondo and Maple on 144th Street. So that's exciting. Are you enjoying those types of talks?
Yeah, I do. I always love being right in front of the people and seeing their reaction and getting to sort of feel the vibe there, bringing Jesus to people and have the love of Jesus there as I'm talking about Jesus. It's a wonderful thing.
Here's a reaction. Yay! I love it too. Go Jesus! Yeah, we love it. And it also, kind of long-term planning, you and I, along with a bunch of other people, and hopefully some of those who are listening right now, will be going, along with Anne Marie Bowen and the Nebraskans United for Life, to the march in Washington in January. Very important event.
Huge.
This is the year to stand up, isn't it?
Amen. Yeah. There's so many things going on. We don't need to go into all of that, but there's so many things going on. What a great witness. The Greek word for witness is martyr. Mm-hmm. What a great witness it is just to go. And it's going to be cold. It's going to be a pilgrimage. It's going to be uncomfortable. But what a great witness for the sanctity of life, the fundamental right for all human beings there in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm. As adults here, with very busy lives, we know that we can't do like the kids are doing with Father Damien Cook and those wonderful priests that are loading up buses and taking kids across country to get there. We're kind of wimpy. We're getting on planes and flying over to Washington and staying. Father Matt Gutowski will be leading us as well. And again, Anne Marie Bowen. And we'll be joining, I'm sure, with the compatriots from Lincoln area and Greg Schleppenbach. And meeting with congressmen and participating in a very, very important activity. So as we begin to approach that time of year, contact Nebraskans United for Life. You'll be hearing more information about it on the radio. Mm-hmm. But Omar and I are going, and we're going to be broadcasting live from there. And
contact Father Damien Cook at St. Peter's Parish to find out if you have teens in high school and young adults who would like to make those bus trips out there. Father Cook organizing it. He is our diocesan rep for the Bishop's Pastoral Plan for Pro-Life Activities and Respect Life.
And contact Greg Schleppenbach in the Lincoln area as well, because in the whole surrounding, we want a whole state contingent,
state
of Nebraska.
Last year it was really cool. We had a huge Nebraskan contingent there. It was awesome. It would be great to double it this year.
Well, this year we're hoping people will come from all over the country. That is our prayer. We want one of the biggest turnouts in 30 years. With a lot of stuff going on, of course, the debates over health care and federally funded abortion and everything else. Mm-hmm. We need to make our voices heard, everybody. And this March for Life is a great way to do it. That's next January.
Okay.
If nothing else, you get to meet really cool people.
That's right.
Yeah. Oh, and the celebration of the Mass in the Basilica of the Immaculate Conception, there's nothing like it. You got to get there early. I remember last time I sat on the floor the entire time, but it was worth it.
Oh, totally worth it.
So you can sit on the floor with Omar and I.
I'll share something. Last year was the first year I got to go, and the entrance procession took a half hour.
Oh, it's
phenomenal. There were so many priests and so many bishops. It's just it's so beautiful to see the witness from our priests and bishops there. Wonderful, wonderful.
Yeah, so it's going to be an incredible January. So, start thinking about it. Start making plans and putting it on your calendar.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, Mr. I Heart Encyclicals, we've been having just such a great response to your being here with us and talking about not only the popes, but of course a lot of the encyclicals that they give to us. Their
it's
teachings.
Extreme adult faith formation.
Absolutely, And let's have you take us where you want to go today.
This morning we talked about Rerum Novarum last time, which was the first great social doctrine encyclical. 1891 and Leo XIII, and we talked about how cool Leo is. 40 years after that was the next great social doctrine encyclical. The Latin title is Quadragesimo Anno, which is ridiculously long. But in English it means on the 40th anniversary. On the 40th anniversary of Rerum Novarum. So when Pius XI wrote it, very much so, he wanted to give his respect to what Leo XIII had started. And he spends actually a whole bunch of the encyclical praising Leo XIII and what he started.
Now, just to put us in the context of history, this is what Leo the 13th had essentially predicted. I mean, many people talk about Pope Paul the 6th with Humanae Vitae mm-hmm. being a very prophetic document. Amen. 40 or 50 years later. Mm-hmm. We now, back then, Leo the 13th, what he saw coming for the 20th century frightened him.
Yeah.
And he wanted to alert and say, hey, here's a wake-up call. Remember the gospel. Point yourself towards the light. Follow the way, the truth, and the light. And here we have 40 years later.
Right.
Tell us what's happened in history.
Well, the year is 1931, so you history buffs, you know what's happened. World War I has already happened. One of the war to end all wars happened mm-hmm. very early on in the 20th century, and the things that Leo the 13th saw really did start to happen. He was prophetic. Some of the most horrible scenes in human history occurred there during World War I, and now you're looking at post-World War I Germany. Germany, after having lost, was just beaten down by the rest of the West, and their economic system was in shambles. You had then a movement of Catholics, and particularly Catholic Jesuits, who, despite all the persecutions during the late 1800s in Germany, they came forward and said, can we offer some middle ground, some Catholic understanding of economics, some Catholic way of living our lives in this Germany that is not communism, it's not collectivism, it's not National Socialism, that would be, you know, was with Hitler later.
Right.
But it's also not individualism, what Pius XI calls it liberalism, or we might call libertarianism now, where every individual to himself and no obligations to anybody else outside of me. Is there a middle road that we can strike? And so these German Jesuits put together this new understanding. They really developed what Leo XIII had started into what we know now as the social doctrine of the Church.
Well, and just phenomenal time, too, when you think about it. Don't forget, in this period, 1931, what was happening, the world coming out of what, the as you termed, the war to end all wars. So it was the Great War in their minds at that time. There would never be another war as bad, which turns out there was.
Yeah.
But also the world was descending into a sort of madness, because you look at what was happening even in our own hemisphere, what was happening in Mexico, with the Mexican martyrs and the church being persecuted there, but also in all the different continents, the world was beginning to descend into something real, extraordinarily dark. And here, are once again, the church is attempting to be that clarion call.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, which is what we're supposed to do. You know, the great Hans Urs von Balthasar, the Swiss theologian, he had that book, Raising the Bastions. We have to tear down the walls. We're not supposed to be sort of these little Catholic ghettos all by ourselves. We're supposed to go out in the world and be leaven and be light to the world and really help transform the culture to bring the whole world to Jesus. That's what we're called to do. And so this call of social doctrine is really meant to do that. The subtitle for this document on the 40th anniversary is Restructuring of the Social Order. I mean, Pius XI is not holding anything back. He wants to restructure the social order for the sake of Jesus.
Good morning and welcome back, everybody. It is 8:39, 21 minutes now in front of 9 o'clock on this midweek Wednesday. 23rd of September in the year 2009, the feast day of St. Padre Pio. Statue sitting right here on our control board. Pray, hope, don't worry. It's a good thing to have when there's a lot of electronic equipment involved. And we welcome you back. I'm Bruce McGregor with...
Chris McGregor.
And to hear from the Faith Formation Office, our Coordinator of Lay Leadership and Social Witness Formation, Omar Gutierrez.
Good morning.
Yeah.
Pray, hope, don't worry.
That's right.
It is at the heart of the gospel in many ways, because it, total abandonment to God's will, you're going to be all right.
That's right.
How about that?
Right.
The victory has been won.
That's right. But in the meantime, it's being a beacon, being a light for our brothers and sisters. And that's when we talk about this, the social justice encyclicals of the church, they're very relevant. They're not archaic documents that are dusty somewhere and now even available to anyone at a click on the internet through Vatican website, but they're living, breathing expressions of the heartbeat of the church.
Yeah, one thing that sometimes we get caught up in, and I do too, when we talk about the social justice, social doctrine, encyclicals of the church are some of the particularities of the economic theories, or you know, this economic system versus that economic system. But even Pius XI in this document on the 40th anniversary of Rerum Novarum, when he talks about restructuring the social order, he's very clear that, yeah, he's talking about certain principles for economics, but he says over and over again, he's also talking about getting back to Christian morals, which is what we do every day.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You can't have a good economic system unless you have moral people, good people, holy people behind it. That's what it always comes back to, that.
Mm-hmm. An economic system is essentially living out our life in the community, in the culture. We are in how we spend our money,
right.
The activities, the work that we do, all of those things that attribute or are a part of an economy of the people, the activity of the people, is an expression of who the people are.
Right. And if you want to look at it, for those of you who may have studied or understand a little bit about theology of the body, our bodies communicate when we do things, when we act. And economics is just an action within a particular realm, a realm of spending or not spending, a realm of distributing, a realm of taking in or creating through business. That's action. It's human action. And one of the things that Pius XI talks about is he addresses those who say, well, the church shouldn't be talking about this stuff. This
mm-hmm.
is economics. This is politics outside of the church's realm. And the Holy Father, Pius XI, says, no, this is exactly what the church should be talking about.
Mm-hmm.
This is human action. This is everyday life. This is how we live out the gospel. This is how we answer the call of Christ in our hearts to bring people to Jesus.
I mean, we have to be Christians in the marketplace.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, there was a commentator on local radio recently who, I don't know why I flipped the channel. Maybe the Lord wanted to have me hear this because to be able to speak on it. Mm-hmm. But he was saying, oh, the church shouldn't, you know, clergy shouldn't have any voice. They don't pay taxes. They don't, because of their tax-exempt status. There's a reason for the separation of church and state. Until they pay taxes, they have no voice.
Mm.
And I thought, oh, no. I mean, it's a lie.
Yeah.
It's a lack of understanding, as you have just said, what it is. We're the church. The clergy are just leaders that are breaking open stuff for us, but we're the activity. We're the living, breathing embodiment in the world. We have to have a say in what happens.
Absolutely. And the church is here to help us understand how to live that out, how practically, what principles we could use. Even though a lot of this is based on the natural law, I think I mentioned last time, Leo XIII talks about the right to private property, and mm-hmm. Pius XI does that as well. But both popes are very, very clear. As Christians, we're called to a higher standard. We understand that the property we've been given is not just for ourselves. It is for all of mankind. There's a universal destination of goods. And so how do we determine then how to best use that? Where should we be looking? And there are practical considerations, but there are also theological, spiritual considerations that we have to tap into, which is why the popes keep going back to when determining how best to live out this life, how best to be a Christian in the marketplace, we have to ground ourselves in the relationship with Christ Jesus, who will let us know how best to use these resources.
Well, talk to us about this particular encyclical. What is the dynamics that we want to pull out of it?
Well, it's really one of the groundbreaking. The first time the term social justice is used is here in this encyclical. It's used 6 or 8 times. So the fact that we use the phrase social justice comes from Pius XI. The term solidarity and subsidiarity come from Pius XI. This notion of looking at the human person and basing our economic or our view on economics from what and who the human person is done greatly by Pius XI. And the fundamental sort of kernel that he gives us is based on Aristotle, based on St. Thomas, and that's the notion that we're human beings and we're individuals. That's true. There's no doubt about that. But we cannot reach perfection by ourselves.
Mm.
You know, Teresa Monahan likes saying that nobody goes to heaven alone.
Right.
Okay? We cannot reach perfection by ourselves. Every human person is a result of education or nurturing by our parents, etc. we have to live in community. By that fact, then, the fact that we cannot reach perfection by ourselves, we have, yes, an individual reality, we also have a social reality. And so when looking at how best to shape the economic system or how best to live out a Christian vocation, we have to keep both in mind. So you have subsidiarity in the individual family, and you have solidarity in the social societal structure. The two both have to be there. And that's that great Catholic both and. It's not either or. It's not either this way or that way. It's both. We have to learn to live with both.
Yeah. What's happening in the world, it's telling you, especially at this particular juncture in time. Mm. I mean, we had the great rise of the Marxist doctrines were happening in Spain, and the revolutions are going on. Communism is really, unfortunately, flourishing now in a very toxic way throughout Russia and that whole Eastern Europe.
Yeah.
And, of course, it's the rise of socialism, the Nazi Party, essentially.
Right, yeah, the Nazi Party is the National Socialists. That's what it stood for. And Pius XI is really pretty brutal in this document against the notions of socialism. He even goes so far as to say, I understand, one of the first documents that Pius XI wrote was against communism, and Pius XI says, I understand that the socialism is broken out, and in reaction, in part, to what Leo XIII wrote, they've tried to soften some of their doctrines, etc., but he says, ultimately, at the end of the day, you cannot be a socialist. You cannot believe in collectivism, where you're forcibly taking the goods of somebody else to distribute to somebody else without their permission or without any sort of grounding in the gospel. You can't be a socialist and still at the same time be an authentic Christian.
Mm-hmm. That's why the gift that we have here in the United States of having a representative government is essential, because in today's world, in the economic discussions that are occurring, there are those who will say the government, by taxing or enforcing policies that would have mandated participation. Now, they may not call it taxes, but if they say you're going to have, it's a mandatory participation in a program which is going to cost you to give money or of your resources, whatever they may be, then that is something that, as a Christian, you have the right to be able to vote in that representative system, you know, to stand up. So it's important that you voice, if at the very least you should voice through your vote.
Exactly.
But if you're in a leadership position in the church, or just as a person of the church, you should speak up to help enlighten the responsibilities of your brothers and sisters around you.
Right. One of the great principles of the social doctrine is participation. We don't have the choice but to participate in the system that we have so that we can do the most good for most people. And Pius XI is very clear that the state's purpose is to maintain, to guard the social structures that allow for the common good to take place. That's what its purpose is there for. But that ultimately, we are responsible for that. And the notion of subsidiarity, that not just individuals, but families, parishes, Rotary clubs, the Red Cross, these private, free organizations of citizens coming together and working at the local level to help those problems at the local level first, before they get addressed by higher levels of authority, that's the way to go, because we're there, the family's right there. We know what the root problems are. And we can better address those things on the lower level.
Mm-hmm. Omar, I want to talk about something, just kind of revisit the social justice aspects of things, you know, in this encyclical, and how through the course of time, particularly, let's just kind of fast forward to where we are today with social justice, how at times it is portrayed. Obviously, abortion wasn't as huge a problem,
right?
You know,
1931,
as it is today. And I think the beautiful thing here is that Benedict XVI, in his latest encyclical, has really put forward the dignity of life that kind of, you know, dovetails off of the social justice thing. And there were a lot of people that were trying to convolute, I think, some of the social justice issues, some within the church, others on the other side, where a majority of Catholics ended up voting for a pro-abortion candidate, you know, who became our president. And, I mean, we really have to maintain this, you know, this dignity, the human dignity of life, that it is probably wouldn't you say, the number one social justice issue?
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, now? I mean, John Paul II says this in Christopher de Lesage, and I couldn't give you the paragraph number, but it's in Christopher de Lesage. It's on his document on the lady. And remember, this realm of social justice and this being a beacon out into the world, that's what we lay people are supposed to be doing.
Right.
Okay. He says in Christopher de Lesage, he says, unless you have these fundamental right of life, all these other rights, you know, health care or just wage, he uses the phrase, they're false and illusory.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't have the right to life, then you can't have the rest. And that talks to, you know, Pope Benedict XVI in the latest encyclical, Caritas in Veritate. He goes over and over and over again about how we have to look at the social justice doctrine as an integrated whole, as a complete thing. Even, you know, Cardinal Bernardine had the seamless garment. We have to look at the whole thing together. And in an interview before he died, Cardinal Bernardine was very clear. He was very clear. Abortion is the number one issue. That is the fundamental issue because it is so fundamental to our whole notion of rights.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yep. Even more than that now, I mean, to show you how, when we talk about earlier about how nations kind of slide into an abyss, as they did in that period following World War I, the Great War that was supposed to end all wars, and it only led to an uglier, nastier, horrendous period in human history with the Second World War.
Yeah.
But as society begins to slip, when we talk about abortion, now we have to aware ourselves that it's even worse than that. We're talking about embryonic destructive research.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because now it's not even ripping the child out of the womb. It's creating a life in a dish to harvest from
to,
it.
To kill it.
Yeah.
Exactly. And we don't want to hear that. The biotechnologies and everything, they don't even want to term it life.
No.
Or human life.
No, and there's and Benedict XVI, I think it was a chilling passage in the latest encyclical that really strikes the heart of this. He says it is no wonder that first world countries like the United States and other places can't even hear the knock of the poor on our own doorstep when we've so deafened our consciences by the violations of human life that we participate in every day.
Mm-hmm.
It has an effect. These things that we do, this biotechnology and the abortion and all the rest of it, these things have an effect on our ability to even hear the problems of the poor, to serve them properly and well. And that's why he says it's charity in truth.
Right.
He says in the beginning of his document, Caritas in Veritate, that if it's not grounded in truth, then charity can become an empty shell which eventually can be filled with anything and become the opposite of what it's supposed to be, of what it is. And so you have a number of examples of this throughout history. There's the in literature. I was thinking when I was reading that this book by Walker Percy, who has this priest who says that sometimes the good intentions of science are what lead us to the gas chambers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is what happens when you remove truth from the charity, from the action, from the praxis that you're trying to engage in. It has to be grounded in the truth. Is this a human being or is it not? And if it is, you must defend it to the hilt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and even when we talk about the beginnings of life, we can even see how this reflects those issues at the end of life issues.
Oh, yeah.
The disposability of the value of each human life at its end. Who's to determine what the end is? The value of the elders within a community are now beginning. Don't think that it's not happening. It's happening in other parts of the world right now. Some of the countries in Europe and even here, there has been the dialoguing, at the very least, of the counseling of those to determine whether or not your life is of value or you're dependent upon your family. So, and draining resources from them should maybe you consider.
Now, do you really want to go on?
Yeah. Right. Are you depressed over this? I mean, some of the verbiage of some of the, I mean, we need to wake up and really evaluate critically and not to use our ignorance as an excuse. Oh, that's just so much for me. I'm not worried about all that. I don't want to take a look at that. Ignorance in today's world of information is not a good excuse.
No, and it's amazing. It becomes pretty funny. You may have heard of Dr. Peter Singer, who's at Princeton University.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He's the head of a bioethical chair at Princeton, for crying out loud. And this is a man who says it's okay It's all right. It's advisable. In order to reduce the number of sufferings in the world, it's okay to kill children who are born. Not children in the womb. Children who are born with things like Down syndrome. After they're born. Because they're a drain on our society.
Oh, there's...
And yet, at the same time, he argues, he's one of the main fellows behind the law in Spain now, where apes are now considered persons.
Mm. Wow.
But the babies in the womb aren't.
Yeah, and there's even test kits now available, are becoming out available now for autism.
Yeah.
I mean, it's diabolical in nature when you begin to, and I mean that quite literally, yeah. Diabolical in its truest sense, when you begin to see the choices we're making. We look back at the time of Pope Pius XI. And the rise, and we look at the horrendous activities that would take that were beginning to take place even then, with the placing of not only Jews but also of gypsies, of the handicapped, the experimentation that was happening in Germany at that time. And we look back and we all that's horrific. You watch the Nuremberg trial, you watch even the movie that was done with Spencer Tracy, and you think, oh, how ghastly. It's happening today.
Yeah.
It's happening in our world today. And we are so... And then we say, well, how could the German people allow it?
Right.
How can we allow it?
Yeah.
This is our time to stand.
Yeah.
And it's charity and truth, bringing forth the reality of the value of every human dignity so that our children and their children's children aren't looking back at our time saying... What was wrong with them?
What were they thinking?
How many times has that happened in history where we look back at the late 1800s or mid-1800s in this country? How could slavery have been here? How could somebody like Thomas Jefferson, who was clearly so very bright and so very had such a great sense of human nature and psychology, own slaves? How could that happen? It's happened. Mm-hmm. It's happening now.
And there isn't the excuse, today we hear people in social justice circles even within the context of the Catholic Church say, well, abortion's a done issue. It is the law of the land. It's not going to change. We need to take care of these other issues. Well, that's a horrible argument when you look at history, because guess what? Slavery was the law of the land. Mm-hmm. The Supreme Court and Dred Scott held it up that the Supreme Court said that Dred Scott was only 3/5 a person.
Yeah. And I'll just quote John Paul II again. These other things are false and illusory, unless there's the right to life.
Exactly. So to look at that Supreme Court ruling on the dignity that robbed the dignity of the African American slaves that were in this country, saying they were only 3/5 person, that ruling, unfortunately, took a civil war to over. But it was changed the law because it was such a violation of human dignity, and. It changed. We were able to. Now we look back and think, oh, what a dreadful decision! How could they have done it? Well, these were brilliant men.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, fast forward to 1972. A law comes down, a bad law. We look back. Even people will tell you it's case law that was bad case law, with Roe versus Wade and Doe versus Bolton. You got to always think of both of them, folks. And we say, well, that's the law of the land. It can't change. Yeah, it can.
Yeah, don't but capitulate.
We don't have to have a civil war to make this happen.
No.
But we can stand up, and it can be fixed. But we have to be informed, and we have to be participants in the culture we've been born into by virtue of our votes as well as our voices and the actions we take.
And it should be said, in the name of love.
Yeah.
In the name of love. Through love, through charity, through kindness. Not through violence, not through hatred, not through anger, through love.
Because all you really need.
That's it.
All you really need is love.
Yeah.
All you need is love.
Omar, thanks so much. We appreciate it.
Oh, I love being here. Thank you so much for having me.
Pleasure to have you with us, Omar Gutierrez. And that's going to wrap things up for this morning as we go into the 9 o'clock hour. We have the Rosary. Glorious Mysteries will be prayed today. Mass recorded earlier at St. Thomas More. And Omar will be at St. Vincent de Paul for a couple of successive Monday mornings.
That's right. This upcoming Monday, September 28th, at St. Vincent de Paul at 7:15 with a breakfast talk. Also the following Monday as well to talk about the and introduce you to the new social encyclical of Pope Benedict XVI, Caritas in Amore. I never get it out. Charity and truth. There we go. And be sure to, you know, I just, again, Omar, you're such a great gift. And I thank Father Gutowski and the Catholic Faith Formation Office to making you available, not only to us, but to everyone out there listening, the entire listening community.
Right.
Bring them in.
Yeah.
Talk to your girl. Break it open even more.
Where else people come from all of a sudden?
Yeah. It's a cloud of witnesses.
Right here.
Hebrews.
All right.
Yes.